Hello and welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm Liz Kay. Emily Sisson has done it. The Providence College alum has achieved one of her ultimate running goals, qualifying for the Olympics in the 10,000 meters. Travel back in time and enjoy this rebroadcast of our conversation with her in 2017, right after she finished among the top five Americans at the New York City Half Marathon.
Hello and welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and I'm joined as always by PC producer and videographer Chris Judge, class of 05. Here at the Providence College Podcast, it's our job to bring you interesting stories from inside the Fryer family. And today we are very proud and fortunate to have Emily Sisson here with us. Emily is a professional runner and a recent PC grad. We can go into your accomplishments later. But first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I know we were just discussing, and actually we're kind of diving headfirst into the podcast before we even started recording it. So we had to stop the conversation and make sure we got the audio recording. But you did a workout this morning, and we're lucky to have you here. What was the workout you did?
I did a tempo run with my teammate Molly over at the bike path this morning. So a little tired, but happy to be here.
Got it. And your teammate Molly Huddle, which is I'll say another person who's being coached by Ray Tracy right now, and you know, you two are some of the best runners in America, and we're certainly fortunate to have you kind of in the Providence area. And I know for me, one of the best parts of my job, I work up in Harkins Hall. I'm on the fourth floor. If I go get coffee or go get my lunch, I can see you and Molly training on the track, usually around 11:30. And that's always nice to see. And for me, it's always a little humbling because I'm usually about to head out for my own run, and I get to see, oh boy, those people are running quite fast. So it is interesting, though, that you guys train obviously here in Providence. Mm-hmm. Why, you know, as professional runners, and you guys are obviously very, very successful, and we'll go into some of the accolades and for you and Molly and, you know, some other people you run with in a little bit, but why did you choose to stay in this area once you graduated?
Yeah, so I decided to stay. I mean, part of the biggest reason was because of Ray, our coach. He coached me all throughout college. And it went so well. I just wanted to keep here, staying with Ray as my coach. And then I also wanted to just learn from, like, Molly and Kim as well, because they've done so much and accomplished so much. I'm like, if I want to be a really good runner, I want to learn from the best. I want to see what they do, how they carry on, like, their just everyday lives and how they, like, have gone where they've gotten. And so those are two of the biggest reasons to stick around.
And Kim Smith is also a PC grad, one of the best runners in Providence College history, which is, you know, it's such a tradition here at PC, on both the men's and women's side. But to say, you know, one of the best runners in PC history, you really have to kind of dig deep. To like, all right, who are we talking about? Because there's so many highly qualified runners. So you say you wanted to stay near Ray. Obviously, he was your college coach here at PC. So what about his coaching wanted you to stay with him once you graduated? And at that point, you kind of have your choice of, you know, who you want to potentially go with.
Well, I was pretty lucky. I had a really great NCAA experience here while I was at PC. And my last year just went really well. And so I was fortunate enough to get a sponsorship and run professionally. And New Balance, my sponsor, were very supportive of me staying in, here in Providence. And sorry, I forgot what the question was.
No, that's fine. So it was kind of like, why would you stay with Ray as your coach after you graduated? Because at that point, as a professional, you can kind of pick and choose, you know, from a litany of people who have, you know, obviously very, very good resumes and, you know, kind of good backgrounds and other professionals they're working with, as I know Ray does.
Yeah, so actually, So I transferred to PC my sophomore year, and that was one of the big things I was looking for when I came here. I always knew I wanted to run professionally, and I wanted to find a college coach that I could trust, that had, like, proven himself with so many athletes before. And that was Ray. Like, I've seen you've seen so many successful athletes come through here, and he's seen it all, I feel like. So even when I came here and transferred here, I was like, well, I hope I can run professionally after college, but I want to have a great college experience. And then after college, I want to find a coach that can, like, help me get to where I want to be.
And when we did the podcast with Ray during the cross country season a few months ago, one of the things that we talked about briefly with him and with Lauren Mullins, who was also on the podcast, was how Ray likes to make sure that each runner has their own personalized, you know, kind of like their own personalized running schedule. So even though you're a team, while you're here, each person approaches the season differently. And then in season has their own personalized running schedule. And for you, was it the same thing?
Yeah, it's the exact same. It's really nice in that it is so individualized. You'll hear a lot of coaches say they're individualized, but Ray really is. And the only hard part is if we're doing different races and our workout days don't line up, then it's like, oh, that'd be nice. But it's like, it's for the best. And so he really looks out for us as individuals and has a very long-term approach. And he said that since day one, since I came here, like 6 years ago, it was a long time ago.
Right.
And so just from day one, he's like been upfront about how he coaches and that's how it is. And it's worked so well and for so many of us.
And this year I don't know when the season starts per se, but recently you've had some you know, high level success at the BU indoor meet. You ran, you know, the indoor 5K. You came, you obviously ran a very, very fast time. I think it was the fourth fastest American indoor 5K. And then 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago or a week ago at the New York City Half Marathon, you were the fourth fastest American half marathon as well. When you have those sorts of, first of all, congratulations, but you have those sorts of times, is it, did you go in with that goal in mind? First of all, and I guess, how do you put that in perspective of, you know, obviously you want to celebrate certain successes, but at the same time, continue to build on that momentum?
Yeah, so I don't really go in thinking, oh, I want to be like ranked here on the all-time list, really. If that stuff happens, it's cool. But I go into a race just wanting to be as competitive as I can and get the most out of it. And hopefully if it plays out well. Like, I love just running a fast time, but so that's what the BU 5K was really nice for. It was like a rust buster for us. That's what we call it when we haven't raced in a while and we go out just to like get our legs moving again. And so that was really cool to run so quick. When Ray told us he wanted us running 15 flat pace, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. But then when him and Molly were like, yeah, you can do it. I'm like, okay, well, they know what they're talking about.
So that 5K time, what does that equate in terms of minute mile pace for the people who are listening? So if you're in 15 minute 5K, is it around 450 mile pace around there?
Yeah, around there. Yeah, okay. I should know what that is. It's really embarrassing. I don't.
So but when you have, how would you compare, say, a really hard race like that? As you talked about having like a rust buster race where you're really kind of, you know, bring it to another level. How does the strength? There you go. So we have Chris Judge on it. Was it 449? See, 450. I was close.
Yeah,
that was a good guess.
I know the 400s, but not the miles.
There you go. And how would you compare a really hard race like that to some of your harder workouts? Can you compare them, or is it a different level once you get into a race?
Usually our workouts are indicative of. Or for me anyway, my workouts are pretty indicative of what kind of shape I'm in. Every once in a while, I'll have like an off day or a bad workout. For the most part, my workouts, I don't know, Ray knows what kind of shape I'm in off of them. But it's obviously like a harder effort and everything. But yeah, it's just really fun to get out there and race after putting in so many hard weeks of training and workouts together.
I can imagine. And, you know, while... You know, there's a lot of people who, you know, use running and doing 5Ks and road races as an outlet for their kind of athletic pursuits, especially as they get older and they kind of leave either high school athletics or college athletics behind. You know, when you get into a race setting, it can be, you know, you kind of get that point where no matter how long the race is, at least for amateurs like myself, where, you know, it's so hard, you're like, all right, I don't know if I can go any farther. And then you have to kind of push past that point. Or if it's a long enough race, maybe that happens a couple times. Does that happen, you know, to professionals like yourself?
Yeah, and I find in the longer races, too, you can go through patches of it where it feels harder, and then, like, you get through it, and then it's not as bad. I've noticed that on the roads, actually, a lot. If I'm doing, like the half marathon, I'll be feeling really good, and then I'll get to, like, a mile, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of tough. Like, but you just kind of, like, hang in there, and often then, like, the next mile, it'll feel a bit better. So you go through, like, patches a bit in longer races, I feel like.
And when you have one of those patches and you're really, you know, you're really struggling or it's really hurting or however you want to put it, do you have kind of a, a typical like mind frame or mindset that you go back to kind of, you know, get through it? Or do you kind of remind yourself of like your goals, or how do you kind of get through that point?
Yeah, well, I just try to read my body as well as I can. And just the biggest thing for me is not thinking too far ahead. If I'm at mile like 8 and I'm like, oh, I still have like quite a bit to go, I don't like thinking like how much more I have to go. So I'm like, okay, well, do I need to back off a bit? Do I need to go a little bit slower? Can I just like hang in here for a little bit? And so it's kind of just like learning to read my body. That's, and like, yeah, just thinking of that moment.
Right. And you're at a level where, you know, when you enter a race, you know, there's, you know, you're competing to potentially win a race, you know, when you enter the race. So do you go in trying to get to a certain time, or do you kind of look at the competition and say, okay, I'm going to run this race accordingly so that I can win? Because sometimes those are two very different strategies, and sometimes the best time may not get you a win, you know, and it comes on, and vice versa.
Yeah, it depends on the race. Like for the New York half, I would like to run. I remember thinking it'd be nice if I could run a fast time here. I feel like I'm in pretty good shape, but I mean, more than anything, I just wanted to be able to compete, and I wanted Molly and I to go 1-2. So more than anything, I just wanted to place really well in and be competitive in that competitive of a field. And if a time came that day, that'd be great. But then there are other days when we're if it's maybe like a not as big of a race, or if it's a race we're just trying to PR, like when we go out to Stanford for a 5K or a 10K, like that's like, then I just want to like really run fast. But it depends on the race.
Okay, got it. And when you go through your training schedule, right, so you have, say, like a 5K is 3 miles, right? And you have mm-hmm. a half marathon, which is literally 10 miles longer. How does that affect your week-by-week training as you kind of progress to each of those races?
Yeah, well, actually, this was my first half marathon last week. So, I'm still new to it. But I feel like it doesn't change that much. I'll taper still the week before. And not run quite as many miles or have quite as intensive workouts leading up to the races. But I don't know. I don't think otherwise it's too different. I mean, the base training's longer and harder now that I'm training for longer races. But yeah, I still felt good in the 5K that we did back at BU. So,
got it. So what's say in the base phase, I guess that's the part where you're just kind of, when you say base, you're trying to get your aerobic base.
Yeah, so I keep saying base. Sorry, I'm thinking about when we were in Arizona for 2 months just training away. So we got some pretty good training in there, and we did just like 8 weeks of just training and workouts back to back with no races. So we could train pretty hard then. But then when we're racing, like you can't train quite the same because you need to be fresh for your races.
Got it. And did you head to Arizona because of, was it the weather or was it the altitude, or what was the reasoning for going out to Arizona for 8 weeks?
Yeah, we went to Phoenix to train, not at altitude, just to get away from the weather. But we heard it was a pretty mild winter here, and then we came back and then the weather then seemed to turn. But yeah, the idea was to get away in case it was like a winter like it was 2 years ago when it was just really hard to run outside.
Right. So when you were out in Phoenix, what was like the normal mileage per week that y'all would do, or how many miles per day would be a normal?
I think I was in the 90s per week then. I don't add up my weekly mileage as much as I probably should. But yeah, I think I was in the 90s around then.
Got it. Yeah. So a lot of people who, you know, kind of train at the highest level, one of the things that, you know, for someone like me, I read about it, you know, something that I have, you know, interest in. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a very good runner, but I do like reading about it, is that you see some people who maybe will live at a certain elevation, a high elevation, right? And then they'll come down to train and then they'll go back to living at a high elevation. And you see whether it's people who live out in Colorado or Mountain Lakes, California, or if they're, you know, in say the Rift Valley in Kenya, that's kind of a common theme. So why, say for you and Molly, obviously you're not doing that. You're living and training here in Providence, Rhode Island. So is that something that you either explored and decided not to do, or how do you approach things like that?
Yeah, I have heard of that. That seems to be pretty popular right now. It's the whole live high, train low. That's what they call it. But yeah, I feel like that's kind of, and Molly does go to altitude. She'll go next month, I think. But to me, that's kind of like one of the like 1% things. Like when everything else is going right, then and I'm healthy and training's going well, then I'll go explore and like experiment with altitude, but I haven't done that yet. So I guess I was injured my first year out of college, and for the last year I've just been trying to get healthy and get fit, and that's like the biggest thing for me was just getting back really fit. And then so now that things have been going well, I actually asked Ray about maybe going to Flagstaff, Arizona with Molly at some point, and he's definitely open for that, to that. So I think I might try that in the fall. But for me, just the most important thing was just getting like solid training in at first and then exploring that.
Right. And then you see certain runners that once, and this is the same thing with any sport, I guess, is that, you know, once you have injuries that all of a sudden are year after year, it's hard to kind of buck the trend and then stay healthy for a long period of time. You know, you look at Shalene Flanagan, who had to drop out the New York City half because she had, you know, a back issue, and then other runners as well. And then, you know, someone like Dina Caster, you know, has been doing it, you know, she's, you know, 45, 46, 47 years old, has been doing it forever. You know, so you kind of have like these two polar opposites, I guess.
Yeah. One thing I remember actually Molly telling me when I first, so I had like my first bad injury in a really long time, like right after I graduated and became a professional. And I remember Molly telling me when I was trying to figure out what was going on, she's like, just take this time to learn as much as you can about what this injury is and what caused it, because oftentimes you'll find that throughout your career, it's the same one that like the same ones that keep coming back. So that's what I did. I went and saw one of the best chiropractors in the country and one of the best physios, and just tried to not just get it to go away, but just learn like what caused it in the first place and how do I prevent that from happening again. And so, yeah, staying healthy is really important to running well long term. So right now I just try to do like a little bit of like exercising or foam rolling every day just to stay on top of that.
Right. And you mentioned earlier that Kim Smith and Molly Huddle really provided you with, you know, kind of either being a mentor or kind of that mentorship role for you. What other things have they taught you, not only in college, but now as you enter the, kind of the pro ranks?
Yeah, a lot. I'm trying to think. A lot of it really isn't so much as like asking them questions all the time, but really just like observing how they do things and how they handle things. I feel like one of the biggest things I've learned from the two of them is just how they handle like setbacks and like things like sickness and how they kind of just, how they handle that. Because in college, even when I was younger, if I would get sick or something, I'd probably freak out a lot more than I do now. And just seeing how they handle things, that's been really important. I'm trying to think what's probably the biggest thing I've learned from them. I don't know, just so many things. Just how they go about, like how they train, how they live, and the kind of sacrifices they've made and everything. And just the kind of people they are.
So you can just so just being around them is kind of the most important piece.
Yeah, that's definitely the most important piece. Just being around and seeing how they do things.
Right, and being a professional runner, obviously, there's, you know, for any professional athlete, especially runners, you have, you know, if you come in first, second, or whatever, there's certain prize money that's associated with that. But you mentioned before that you're also sponsored by New Balance, right?
Yeah.
So you have that piece. So is, first of all, how does it work for you once you graduated college to kind of enter the pro ranks and then get kind of navigate the whole sponsorship question?
That's actually something I did ask Molly and Kim a lot about. That was one of the things I questioned them a lot about. But I have an agent, and he kind of sorted through all that because it can get very tricky. So that was really nice having him, and I still have him. His name's Ray Flynn. He's my agent, and he just set everything up for me and made it a lot easier and less stressful for me.
Right. And then you see other runners who kind of been more established, you know, people like Lauren Fleshman, Kara Goucher, who, and even Shalene Flanagan, who we mentioned before, who kind of go into not only their careers from a running perspective, but try to also branch out into other ventures kind of while they're also pursuing their career. And obviously, it's still early in your professional career, but is that something that people are doing more and more of, especially with how social media can be so effective in that realm?
Yeah, I think so. And I think just having something else, because running, like, it's my dream job and I love it, but I know I won't be doing it forever. So it'd be nice to have something else. It's like still within the sport, I guess for when I'm done someday, but hopefully it's not for a really long time. But
right.
Yeah, I think when I'm done like competitively running, I'd still like to stay in the sport somehow. And I don't know how what that would be yet, but I'm actually doing my MBA here, so maybe that could lead to some options.
Right. So when did you first know that you were fast?
I think it was like in fourth grade, we did like a mile in gym class or something. And I was like running with all the boys, but then I just did track.
So I got to ask, soccer, did you win?
I actually can't remember. I think I did, but I can't remember. I remember I was just running. I think I might have. It was so long ago.
Right.
But then I just did running to keep in shape for soccer with my friends.
So when did you shift from, you know, soccer being the primary sport to running becoming the primary sport?
It was in middle school because I played soccer for a really long time, and I, like, Mia Hamm, like, was my idol. I loved her, and I wanted to grow up and be a soccer player. And then I just started, I think it was in middle school. Yeah, it was in middle school. I started running more, and then I'd rather be running than going to soccer practice, I remember thinking. So I was like, oh, I should probably just stick to running then.
Right, because it's the same, you know, cross country and soccer. If you're in from a school sport perspective, they're the same season.
Yeah.
So you really have to make
that
choice.
That actually was part of the reason I forgot about that. Yeah, they're in the same season.
Whereas track, obviously, at least in the Northeast, track is in the spring, cross country is in the fall, and soccer is in the fall, unless you're doing the club sport piece.
It would have been hard to do both, though, at the same level. So.
No, I can't. Yeah. I bet. And do you think, I know this is a big deal for a lot of people now when they, you know, whether in middle school, high school ranks, it's kind of the sports specialization piece. You know, like, you know, pick a sport as early as you can and get really good at it. Do you think being someone who did multiple sports helped you? Or do you think it had any effect?
Oh, no, I did loads of sports when I was younger. Like, I think starting from a really young age, like, I had a friend and we would just take turns picking which sport we were going to do. I think when we were like six, we're like, oh, let's do soccer this fall. And then we did like ballet the next spring or something. And I loved like just exploring everything. I found out I wasn't good at a lot of things, but I did enjoy it.
So if you could trade places now with any other professional athlete, who would it be?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Maybe a soccer player. No, actually, I don't know.
No, I know that was a random question.
I don't know. I guess that's the only sport I ever did. So I'm like, I don't know.
Right. All right. So I got a couple more questions for you. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. We really appreciate it. Let's see here. I know you talked earlier about why you came to PC. So, you know, in terms of your transfer, right? So I guess the first thing is, why not PC right out of high school? Why did you not come here right away?
I wasn't as open-minded. I went to Wisconsin. It was a great school. I met a lot of great friends there. I still talk to some of them. But it's where, like, I was born in Wisconsin. Both my parents went there. So I just loved the idea of it from, like, such a young age. So I just figured, oh, that's where I'll go. And I still liked it a lot. But then I realized it wasn't actually the best fit running wise when I was there. So so I talked to a lot of people, and people were like, oh, you'd be silly if you didn't look at Providence. And I started talking to Ray, and I was like, wow, he seems to really know his stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So it's say Saturday or Sunday, you go on your long run, however long that happens to be. You come back, you're starving. If you could eat anywhere in the Providence area, where are you going?
There's so many good places. I guess for brunch after a long run, I really like Cook and Brown. It's over on Hope Street. But there's so many good brunch places and so many good restaurants here. I love that.
All right. But that was the first one that came to mind. Cook and Brown for brunch?
Yep.
All right. What's the next race on your schedule?
The BAA 5K.
BAA 5K. And when's that?
That's the weekend of the Boston Marathon. So 2.5 weeks from now. I want to say they're on the 15th of April.
Okay. What is if you have an ultimate career goal in running, what would that be?
Well, I would like to make an Olympics. that'd probably be one of the top ones, but,
any particular event or race?
I really am excited to see what I can do in the marathon. I love road racing. So, maybe run like a fast marathon and, place well at one of the major ones. Yeah, I feel like those would be probably the biggest things for me.
Okay. And last question, I know that you're a shy person, but very recently FloTrack put out an article, I'm sure you saw it, said Emily Sisson, next great American roadrunner. When you see something like that, when you first see that headline, how does it affect you? Like, what do you think when you first see that?
It doesn't really affect me much. It's like, it's nice. But I really don't like look that much at like websites or message boards because I don't ever want to have to like need praise off other people or like get sucked into criticism either. So, I mean, it was nice. Yeah. But, I don't know. It doesn't affect me too much, I suppose. Just
that's
nice.
Right. Well, I guess it has to be that way, right? So you can just kind of do your own thing and, you know, let it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Providence College Podcast. Episodes are available in all the usual places, as well as the college's YouTube channel and on your smart speaker. For producer Chris Judge, I'm Liz Kay. Until next time.